Well, good morning and welcome to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on a morning that we are still, of course, celebrating the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Grey Cup victory. But we have lots of great other things to talk about on the program, including today, the Roundtable of Justice, which, as you know, we do every Monday, 10 o'clock for 1 hour. We stop down and we talk about a variety of things that tend to be law related. They could be around community safety, and we'll bring in guests, and these guests have included everything from police officers to criminologists to lawyers. We've had retired judges and justices on the program before, and it's a variety of topics that we will explore every Monday. And so today's topic, I'm really looking forward to this discussion, because we live in a world today where we have become very used to seeing and hearing about incidents that happen in our communities and around the world, but very seldom is there a story in the news that doesn't have an element of surveillance with it. You think about whether it's a car accident or a robbery or even porch pirates stealing, you know, those packages that you've ordered getting ready for Christmas. Often there's some surveillance video. It could be from a doorbell cam. It could be from a store, of course, shoplifting investigations, those types of things. Surveillance cameras are everywhere, in businesses, part of a security package in public places, and as I mentioned, home security systems, things like doorbell cams and other surveillance systems that are set up around homes. But what are the rules? Where can the cameras be placed? Where can't they be placed? What around the rules around who has access to the video? For what purpose? How long is it held for? How do the police use it? I mean, there's so many different questions that come from this. And what does the future look like? Well, I've got two great guests on this topic. I'm very happy to have Christelle Creel joining us. Christelle is a partner at MLT Aikens in Regina. She's co-leader of the firm's privacy, data protection, and cybersecurity area. She's got a lot of experience with complicated cybersecurity, privacy, freedom of information, and technology matters. And she is an asset not only to her clients, but to that entire organization. Christelle, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Great to have you. Ritesh Kotak is also joining us. Ritesh, also a lawyer in Ontario. He is a tech and cybersecurity strategist. He's a keynote speaker. He's a tech entrepreneur. And last year, he was named at the University of Ottawa's annual Alumni Awards Gala. He was named the Young Alumni Award, recognizing basically individuals under 40 who have demonstrated significant contributions in his or her field. And of course, his is the incredible impact he's made in the realms of technology, cybersecurity, and law. Ritesh, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you both here. Maybe, Christelle, I'll start with you. Cybersecurity is such a big area, and so we're taking a narrow look at just the surveillance side of it, but it is growing. I mean, it's an understatement to say exponentially, it seems, every day.
It is. Unfortunately, it's something that we see impact businesses daily. We have clients call to say, we've had a cyber incident, we don't have access to anything, what do we do? So absolutely, it continues to grow, and now AI makes it even a larger risk.
I look forward to talking about the impact that AI has when it comes to surveillance. Ritesh, is it safe to say most people probably don't even know how many times in a day they're captured on some sort of surveillance video?
Most people don't know. And in fact, if you actually just go and try to see how many cameras you're passing, you know, you mentioned doorbell cameras, there's CCTV, you're walking into retail locations, public cameras, people just taking out their phones, recording and live streaming as well, and you get caught on camera and then blasted off all over the internet. So yeah, I don't think people recognize how much they're being surveilled, how much of their lives are going online, whether it be intentional or unintentionally as well.
I'm guessing that for many people, even hearing what Ritesh just said, that's probably a cause for concern. And that's why I wanted to talk about this, to learn a little bit about the regulation. Do we have strict rules and regulations, Christelle, on this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's where privacy laws come in. So when it comes to businesses or public organizations, we've got specific privacy rules that set out the guardrails for what can and can't be done with somebody's surveillance. So for example, if you've got someone's image that they're identifiable on, that's where privacy laws come in. And I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about that later, but that's where the rules are.
Right. Let's talk a little bit, Ritesh, about the ways in which surveillance video. And I keep saying surveillance video, but there's probably other terms for it, because it's not just used to capture criminal activity. This surveillance is being captured regularly throughout Canada and the world and used for a variety of purposes. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So there, you know, we normally think of cameras, as you mentioned, around the surveillance bit. You know, is a package left on my porch still there when I come home? Who's entering the vicinity within of my property? But cameras in themselves have just become tools for just everyday use. We think about smart home automation. So recognizing an individual as they're entering their house and automatically unlocking the door. We've seen health and wellness related applications as well, where you have cameras that track your movement to know whether you're and they give you fitness coaching. You know, I've seen very innovative ways around the use of that in retail and customer experience. There's been numerous elements of technology being used to look at whether customers are repeat customers, if they're going to how long they're spending in the stores, if they're going to buy stuff. We see it in agriculture as well, where cameras are being put on drones to and flying across crops to look at health of crops. So it goes well beyond the surveillance component. That is clearly one of the things that is front and center. But when you have access to video and you can layer different layers of analytics onto it, you can do a lot of things. So what I've seen recently is there's cameras that's being stuck in everything from smart thermostats to drones to you name it. If you can put a camera in there and it can be connected, people are now putting cameras or microphones.
Ritesh Kotak is one of two great guests that I've got. Christelle Creel is also joining me. Both are lawyers. Ritesh working in Ottawa and does work on tech, cybersecurity. He's a keynote speaker, a tech entrepreneur. Christelle is a partner at MLT Aikens in Regina and a co-leader of the entire firm's privacy, data protection, and cybersecurity area as well. Listening to both of you, and you're both younger than me, but I think about my career. I spent 30 years in policing, and in my early years of policing, we would be told the client has a security video they would like to hand over to police. We would almost cringe because the quality of it, you know, you're squinting at grainy video. But where we're on now, Christelle, with video and the capabilities, even night video has just, it's just leaps and bounds different from where it was even 5-10 years ago.
Absolutely. So Ritesh, when you talk about all the technology and all the cool advancements, the problem is that law doesn't keep up, right? So we're years behind in terms of what the principles are for how we capture what actually can be done with that surveillance. So absolutely, we have a huge amount of surveillance and the cameras are, like Ritesh said, coming from all different angles. And the law is sort of just trying to keep up with that in terms of what can and can't be done with that.
And Ritesh kind of referred to this as well, Christelle, but I mean, we also have what they refer to as smart surveillance. So it's not now just a general camera that's recording. I mean, it's recognizing and almost categorizing things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think So the concern is that people are being caught on all of that. Ritesh mentioned we're all captured on cameras much more than we think we might be. And so there's where additional concerns come into play, where we're perhaps being incorrectly identified, or it's not us that we're part of something and our whole life is sort of being captured in a way that we don't know or that we don't have control over.
We've heard the term a couple of times already in the short time we've been chatting, artificial intelligence, come into this conversation. That's where I want to go next. We're up against our first break, but after the break, we'll talk about how AI is changing the capabilities of surveillance, both positively and negatively. And as always, I'm welcoming your texts at 1-877-332-8255. If you want to ask a question, we've got two great guests, Christelle Creel, partner at MLT Aikens in Regina, Ritesh Kotak, who is a tech and cybersecurity strategist and a lawyer out of Ontario, talking about surveillance video, its capabilities, maybe some of its challenges and questions that you might have. We'll take our break and we'll be right back here on the Roundtable of Justice. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show, the Roundtable of Justice.
Welcome back to the program. Today on the Roundtable of Justice, we are talking surveillance and all the questions that swirl around surveillance, whether it be in a public space, whether it be at a public building or even just the street, the sidewalk, the park. What about businesses? What about those cameras that are in doorbells or a lot of people use as part of their home security system? People are being caught on surveillance video multiple times a day. As you drive down the street, as you drive down your neighborhood, you do or maybe don't realize how many times you're being caught on video. Many times, of course, you drive by in your vehicle and it's a passing thing. But police will often, when it comes to an investigation, find ways to use that video. And most times they have to get some sort of judicial authority to be able to access the video and use it in an investigation. But it can be very, very helpful. It's changed the game, I would suggest, in policing. And so my guests today both are lawyers with great expertise in this area. I've got Ritesh Kotek joining us. Ritesh is a lawyer in Ontario. He's a tech and cybersecurity strategist. He's done lots of speaking on the topic. He's a tech entrepreneur himself. And Christelle Creel is joining me. She is a partner at MLT Aikens in Regina, co-leader of the firm's privacy, data protection, and cybersecurity area in their organization there as well. So we talked about AI. Christelle, maybe I'll start with you. How is AI changing what used to be a camera and a VHS machine that recorded the video? Now, I mean, not only do we have high tech and evolved security and surveillance systems, but a smart sense of security and surveillance through the use of AI.
Thank you. Yeah. So I think the question is actually, how can it not change all of that stuff? Because it's so tremendously, we don't even know what it's going to be able to do in about a year's time. So I think part of the problem with AI is that it's advancing so quickly, and there's lots of different types of AI systems. Some are more reliable. Some are have had their background work done. So Ritesh will speak, I'm sure, a little bit about some of the due diligence that's done on some of these systems. But a lot of these systems actually have backdoors for malicious actors. They have ways that you can use surveillance that are not sort of for the true purpose. So let's pretend I'm a thief and I want to come up with certain ways that I can rob a specific place. Well, if places around the area aren't using reliable systems and AI plugins and that kind of thing, you may be able to gain access to it. There might be backdoors, right? So there's lots of scary areas that it might go, but there's also lots of really helpful areas that it might go. Yeah.
Ritesh, you want to jump in on basically the evolving and ever-changing way artificial intelligence is impacting this area of surveillance? Oh, do we have... Sorry, go ahead, Ritesh.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that was a great line I recently heard, and it said, the worst AI that you're ever going to use is right now. And that just goes to show how much it's evolving. Forget a year from now. We just won't even know what the capabilities are going to be 24 hours from now. And that just goes to show you just how rapidly it's changing. But when it comes to artificial intelligence, especially layering it on a surveillance platform, you see different things. I think the most common component that people think about is facial recognition. And there was a lot of controversy on the use of facial recognition on videos, on images. And, you have two types of searches. You have what's called a one-to-one search. So, you know, here's an image or a video, and then try to compare that to a database that I currently have versus what we saw different technologies that were out there where you had a one-to-end search where here's an image of a person or a video of a person. Go on the internet and find out who they are. And it feels that we're using 20th century frameworks for 21st century problems. But the AI has just continuously getting better. It's getting to a point where when it comes to in comparison to human beings, is it going to be better? Is it actually going to be able to bake out the bias that human beings may have? There's a lot of talk around AI and bias right now. We call that responsible AI, trustworthy AI. How are decisions actually made? Is there bias baked into the algorithms? But there's also another counter argument around, is the bias actually, is it less when you're using automated technology versus human beings? And we're seeing this when it comes to leveraging the technology to identify individuals, but also identify items, smart alerts. We're seeing it using by municipalities and the public for license plate recognition, cameras on smart displays, even cameras on cars when it comes to driverless vehicles. You know, you look at a Tesla or some of these vehicles, they have like so many cameras inside and outside mm-hmm. of the car, and they're continuously collecting data and video. So this is just the world that we're living in. And just building on the previous point, we have 20th century frameworks, 21st century problems. We can't seem to play catch up.
So how, because Christelle, I heard you say this very early in our chat, that often it's very tough for the law to keep up with the advancing technology. It's advancing so fast. But I'm thinking specifically around privacy. And that's where I know a lot of the questions we're going to get after 10:30 will be around my rights, my privacy, my, you know, need to be either notified or understand how that data is going to be stored, how it's going to be used. Are we keeping up, or are there almost like daily gaps?
So I think so the principles are there, and we can always go back to the principles, but the law itself is certainly far behind. So the privacy principles when it comes to private sector businesses, for example, or public organizations. If you go to the library, for example, there's specific privacy laws that would apply to the library, and there's rules about how they can collect, use, and disclose your personal information. Mm-hmm. So that includes your image, for example, in video surveillance, but almost anything that they have identifiable about you. And so basically what they need to do is explain to you, get your consent for what it is they're going to be doing with your information. There's exceptions where you can get implied consent. But so in the context of surveillance, there should be sort of clear signage about what's being surveilled, for example, a clear policy or statement about how long that's kept for, what can be done with it, who can access it, how it can be used, who it can be disclosed to. For example, if law enforcement comes knocking, when they might be provided to law enforcement. So there are these rules in the background, and those are the basic principles. But we certainly don't have, you know, specific rules or laws on AI, for example.
Right. Ritesh, I want to bring you back in. We've only got about a minute and a half left in this segment, but is there a need in a public space for the public to know that surveillance exists there?
Absolutely. I always tell people, you got to go on the assumption that you're continuously being surveilled. But yes, I think there needs to be clear signage. The individual needs to be aware. And you got to go beyond the fact of, you know, this area is being monitored and that we have surveillance cameras. Because now we're starting to see an application layer of artificial intelligence on top of it. So are you using it for public safety? Are you using it for marketing and business purposes? Are you tracking how many times that customer is coming in? Are you using facial recognition? If those boxes are being checked, I think there needs to be clear signage and clear disclosure so the individual can make a choice on whether they want to enter your premises or not.
Okay. What we're going to do is we will take our next break here. Again, my two guests that are joining us today on the Roundtable of Justice, we've got Ritesh Kotak and Christelle Creel, both with expertise, experience, both legally and from a technology standpoint in the area of privacy, cybersecurity, and we're talking mostly today about surveillance. When we come back, we'll talk about the vulnerable side of, can we hack into these systems? What is the probability, the possibility of that happening? And is that actually in a system that's set up to help protect your home, maybe causing you some risk there? And I want to get to some listener questions as well. There's lots of people texting in questions. I've got a variety of them that I will get to off the text line, 1-877-332-8255. We'll take our next break. We'll be right back here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Welcome back to the program. Today on the Roundtable of Justice, we're talking about surveillance videos, which, of course, can be in homes, can be in businesses, can be in public spaces, public locations. And my two guests today are perfectly poised to talk about this. Christelle Creel is a partner at MLT Aikens in Regina and is co-leader of the firm's privacy, data protection, and cybersecurity area. Ritesh Kotak is a lawyer in Ontario. He also does work in tech and cybersecurity. He's a strategist, keynote speaker, tech entrepreneur, and spent a short time in your career, although you're a young guy yet, Ritesh. You were a police officer for a short while.
Yeah, so I started my career actually with the Toronto Police Service in numerous roles, and mainly everything around like tech and cyber. Worked in computer crimes, cyber crimes, and worked on some very interesting investigations. And yeah, did that for about 7 years, and then decided to go into tech before I thought, you know what, maybe I'll become a lawyer.
Well, I'm very curious. I sat in on a presentation a number of years back from someone who was talking about the vulnerability of, this was home-based surveillance systems. So these, you know, whether it's Google Nest or whatever you want to call it, where they have access to through Wi-Fi or through some form of connecting to the internet, where you can, from your phone, check the rooms in your house, keep an eye on your pet, those types of things. And there was this notion that they're fairly easy to hack into. Have we evolved, Ritesh, in that regard, or is there still a vulnerability there for those systems?
So there's a huge vulnerability. And I think people would be surprised when they find out that one of the biggest offenders of this type of technology and these vulnerabilities is actually baby cams. You know, you put baby cams in your by a crib or whatever, so you can monitor an infant, and all of a sudden those cameras, there's been numerous instances where they've been hacked, and people have said stuff over the two-way radio and really scared parents. But no, we haven't. Those vulnerabilities still exist. In fact, the default credentials that come on a lot of these hardwares is still the default that is available online, you know, admin being the username and a password, you know, being password. And there have been shifts on it to make sure that the technology is more protected. In fact, in the United Kingdom, they actually said if you're going to be providing technology, these hardwares to individuals, you can no longer use default credentials. They all have to be random credentials. So because people just weren't changing them. There's also those updates that you get on the hardware, that those updates aren't net new features for the application. Those are usually security patches and updates. And if you aren't updating these cameras, these thermostats, these smoke detectors or whatever type of smart device, you know, doorbell cameras that you're putting within your home that may have microphones or cameras in them, you're going to be vulnerable. And there are websites out there that actually give you the exploits, tell you how to deploy those exploits. And with relatively zero coding, you're able to infiltrate these devices and take control. So all the more reason to really know what you're putting within your home, making sure that it's from a legitimate supplier, keeping it updated, changing those default credentials, or yes, hackers will be able to get access to these feeds live within your homes.
We're chatting today with Ritesh Kotak and Christelle Creel, both lawyers who specialize in cybersecurity, data protection, privacy, and we're talking strictly around surveillance right now. A number of texts are coming in, and so I want to make sure that we get to a few of these. This one is interesting to me. It's Don, who says he works in a warehouse in Regina. He doesn't want to mention who his employer is. He says, I have no problem. I have a great business that I work for, but I do know in our warehouse we have security cameras that monitor. Obviously, we deal with a lot of very valuable things, and so it's probably monitoring a number of things. But basically, what he's wanting to know is, you know, what are the things that the cameras can and can't be used for? Christelle, maybe I'll come to you with this one. And he even said, in terms of productivity, is there an expectation that our bosses would let us know if they're using the cameras for that purpose?
Yeah, those are good questions and ones we often deal with from the employer side as well. So depending on who the employer is, there'll be one of those frameworks that apply. And so there's a sort of a phased approach that you have to go through when you're looking at doing something like surveillance in a warehouse. So you'd start with what we call a privacy impact assessment. So going through what needs to happen for this to be compliant with law. So to talk to some of those questions. So where the cameras are placed, what they're used for, how long things are kept for, how they can be disclosed. All of those things are determined by privacy laws. And so things like productivity are things that our privacy commissioners have said you can't actually use it for that purpose. And so in a warehouse, you should have a sign that says you're under surveillance and here's the privacy policy or statement with more information about it.
Okay.
And then that's where the pieces are documented for, you know, we only keep it for this long unless there's some sort of incident. It's only accessible to our privacy officer, et cetera. So it should be clearly communicated and there should be someone that you can ask those questions mm-hmm. to.
Fairly common in work. Like I think mm-hmm. about a bank
yeah.
environment. Obviously, yeah. they've got security cameras running there. So it's fairly common for some workplaces, depending on the nature of the job, that they would have them set up.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in some cases, they're just so you can exhaust all the other ways of trying to make sure that you're limiting theft, et cetera. And there's just not another way other than to use appropriately structured surveillance mm-hmm. in areas that are high risk, for example, and during times that are high risk. So that's part of the consideration. Where are they facing? How long are they recording? When are they running? That kind of stuff as well.
Right. Ritesh, I want to bring you back into the conversation. I've seen three or four texts now on the line talking about people asking what the rules are around. They have neighbors who have either a doorbell camera or in some cases backyard surveillance for their own yard, but it captures part of the neighbor's yard as well. Janine, one of the texters here, tells a story basically about her teenage daughter, had some friends over. They had a hot tub party. It was a birthday party. And she was feeling very uncomfortable about the fact that she knew her neighbor's backyard video surveillance camera captured that their yard as well. And so she said, I'm not saying anything bad about my neighbor. I'm just saying I'm very uncomfortable with what I think is getting caught on the video. Ritesh, are there rules around that?
So I guess it would vary from province to province, but the short answer is that it's such a gray area. I think when you're within your home that you do have an expectation of privacy. There may be municipal bylaws around cameras on private property. We've seen this in certain municipalities across Canada. I wouldn't know exactly what, with respect to Saskatchewan. I think even with the new systems, you can create privacy zones that block the ability to record neighboring areas. But quite frankly, if someone's going to put up a camera and they're going to be recording part of your backyard, it really does depend based on your location. From what I've seen, it's very difficult to enforce. Usually it's a conversation that you want to have with your neighbor and say, hey, do you mind not doing this? Easier said than done. There might be some civil remedies potentially available if some of these videos are being posted online. Maybe you can do what are called takedown requests as well if they're being posted on social media. But it's such a gray area and it's extremely difficult to enforce and time consuming as well. And when you call the police on your neighbor recording you, I guarantee they're probably going to come and say, this is a civil matter and sorry, there's not much we can do about it.
Christelle?
Yeah, I think that those are some very good points, Ritesh. So in Saskatchewan, we don't have specific laws that apply to the individuals, but we would fall back on those civil remedies that you mentioned. So we've got things, for example, tort laws, so the right to sue somebody else, for example, if there's a willful invasion of their privacy. And so that isn't give you a really great upfront remedy. It's something that you can do after mm-hmm. the fact if they do something with the information. But I think you do have the ability to use those conversations with your neighbors. And that's probably the right starting point to say you have the right to monitor your yard mm-hmm. And what's happening on your sidewalk, but adjust it so that it doesn't go into my sidewalk. I would say that's a great way to start.
Okay, we're going to take go ahead, Ritesh.
Look, I've also seen technology being used to circumvent some of these things. So I've actually seen neighbors put up what are called infrared flutters. So especially at nighttime. So if your neighbor does have a camera, all they get is like a big blob of light because these are invisible infrared technology to circumvent the recording. So there have been interesting uses of technology, but other than that, there's not much more you can do.
Okay, we're going to jump into our last break. We'll come back. Christelle Creel and Ritesh Kotak are my guests. We're talking the rules around surveillance drones and business capturing suspects or accused that are committing crimes. Can they just paste them on Facebook? What are the consequences? What are the rules? More of your questions coming forward here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Finishing up our discussion today on the rules, the regulations, and I guess some of the questions that can arise from surveillance. Surveillance video, whether it's home, business, or in public spaces. Ritesh Kotak and Christelle Creel are my two guests. Both lawyers, Ritesh joining us from Ontario, Christelle, a lawyer in Regina, and we have lots of great questions that have been coming in on the text line. Ritesh, there's a few questions I've seen around drones, and I remember back when I was with the police service, we had the owners of a daycare concerned about a neighbor down the street who would often fly a drone over the backyard when the kids in the daycare would be outside playing. What are the rules there when it's actually recording pictures or video?
Yeah, and drones have just become that much more available. They're very cheap now as well. You can buy them online. Before, the sales were very controlled, and now it's you can just go into just about any electronic store and buy one. So previously you did need a license. You needed like a drone pilot certificate. You had to submit a flight plan. There was all these rules around it. However, with the latest rules, if you have what's called a micro drone, which is less than 250 grams, as long as you maintain visual line of sight and you fly it under 400 feet in the air, you're okay to fly it wherever you want, as long as it's not near a airport or utility or communications tower. You'll be able to fly it, record. And this is one of those big issues right now that people are literally taking drones and flying it over individuals' backyards. You have schoolyards. We've seen it over police stations as well, other secure facilities. And there's not much that can be done as long as those rules are followed, the line of sight and under 400 feet. You may have a civil claim against the person. But again, I don't know of any successful claims to date, but it's a gray area that we just haven't figured out when it comes to drones and recording of audio and video.
I assume we're going to see evolving some sort of rule, regulation, could even be something like bylaw, like local municipalities coming up with some sort of regulation on it, because I don't see that problem going away. We've only got about 3 minutes left, and Christelle, I want to come back to you. So I own a business. Someone comes into my business and commits a theft, steals something off a shelf, they don't pay for it. I have them on surveillance video. Can I simply post that on my Facebook page and say, this guy's a bad guy, he stole from me, please help me identify who it is? Is that okay?
Yeah, so we get lots of people that ask this question, and you see social media, lots of people posting this type of stuff. So unfortunately, that does put you at a lot of risk as a business. So there's been complaints, for example, to the privacy commissioners about businesses doing this, where they have a public report against them that says that's incorrect, it's in violation of privacy laws. There's potential claims against you from the individual who, you know, if the individual does not end up being actually guilty of whatever you're claiming that they did, there's concerns about things like defamation, violation of privacy, as I talked about before, you can sue somebody for that type of thing. So the first step is probably to go to the police with that. And so I think the concern, though, and why people do it is because you immediately, as you said, you know, you get 20 people saying, this is the person, this is where they are, and this is how you can follow up. You should still be going to the police, though.
You know, I noticed even after Halloween, there were a lot of people, because the Blue Jays game was on, they didn't want to answer the door. They put a bucket of candy outside and said, take one. And then the next day, posting videos of kids basically dumping the whole bowl. But I mean, this is pictures of, in many cases, young people doing this. And those were posted on lots of social media sites.
Well, that's exactly it, right? And so I think that comes back to where you have limited remedies that come after the fact, where, you know, the parents should arguably go and say, you know, please take this down. There's sometimes the platforms have rules that if something is in violation of privacy laws, that you can submit one of those takedown requests that Ritesh mentioned. Mm-hmm. But then it becomes you monitoring all those sites and trying to do something about it after the fact.
Right, which is, I can't even imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we literally skimmed the surface. An hour goes by very, very quick. Ritesh Kotak, thank you so much for your time today. I'm sure we're going to check in with you and have you on the program again. Appreciate you joining the show.
Thank you for having me, and looking forward to being back on.
Right on. And Christelle Creel, thank you very much for popping in studio. Great to have you here. And great, selfishly, it's great for us to have a local connection of someone who we can, hey, we have a topic we're working on. Maybe we should check in with Christelle. So I hope that we'll be able to connect with you again. But thanks so much for coming on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Roundtable of Justice today has focused on surveillance. If you weren't able to catch the whole conversation with my two great guests, you can always go back and check it out on the web. CJME.com, CKOM.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, we'll take a break. We got lots more on the show, including more chats with some of our staff that were out doing some investigative reporting, if you want to call it that, during the Grey Cup celebrations, both in Saskatoon, in Regina, and of course in Winnipeg. All of that and more still to come here on the program. You're listening to 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.